From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For the band Fictionist, it must have been tough telling family and fans their music label had dropped them. Remember all the hype surrounding the band a few years ago? They were in that competition to be on the cover of Rolling Stone, which they didn't win, but they did score a deal with Atlantic. That didn't work out, but it turned out to be a mixed blessing. Stuart Maxfield says the label didn't really understand who they were as a band, and maybe at the time, they didn't either. But music, he says, is our story to write. So now they have a new album to tell it, and he says they think they found themselves. Fictionist is joining us today to talk and to play after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The guys in the band Fictionist knew there would be compromises they'd have to make when they signed their deal with Atlantic Records. This was a pretty heady time a few years ago. They were getting national attention in this competition to get on the cover of Rolling Stone. They didn't get that, but they did get the deal. And it didn't take long before they realized just how much they'd have to compromise to get the album made. It seems like in situations like that, you have to know how much to give and at what point you've given too much. They never really could work that out, and Atlantic ended up dropping the band, which smarts for sure, but it's one of those things that helps you clarify what you're really about as musicians. Fictionist says their new album expresses that. And today in the program, we're continuing our local music series, and Fictionist is joining us here in the studio to talk about that experience over the last few years, but mostly to play from their new album. Stuart Maxfield is with us. He is on vocals and bass guitar. Stuart, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Doug. Thanks.
Robbie Connolly is with us on vocals and lead guitar. Robbie, welcome back to you.
Hello there.
Jacob Jones on keys is with us. Jacob, welcome to you.
How you doing?
Great. We're still figuring out the mics. That was Stuart and Robbie saying hi before. Brandon Kitterman is with us. Brandon, welcome back to you.
How's it going? Thanks.
On guitar, bass, and synth. And Aaron Anderson with us on drums. And Aaron, welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
I should mention that they will have a release party for their new self-titled CD, Fictionist. Obviously, we'll give you details about that as we go along. In the meantime, we invite you to check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. We have a free download of one of their songs and a drawing for tickets, by the way, and CDs as well. Well, so I promise I don't want to spend the hour talking about Atlantic.
Whatever you want.
Stuart, let me start with you. And did you know what you were in for? Did you know that it might be a little dicey, that you may have to give up a little bit? I mean, did you know when you first jumped in?
I don't think any of us knew. I don't think we had an idea getting into it, which is probably why we got into it in the first place. It was a wonderful learning experience for all of us, but in the end, it was challenging. For a lot of reasons, I'm sure we're going to be getting into that. But yeah, it was a complicated thing. I mean, we went from being ecstatic about being signed, every band's excited about that, to sort of learning the uglier side of the industry and sort of getting a glimpse at what's happening out there right now. It's sort of like the status quo of everything. So,
Robbie, what about you? I mean, I guess on some level, you probably didn't want to jinx it, but you're thinking, hey, I think we're in. We're gonna get there now.
Yeah, I think everyone's super excited about any new opportunity, and as you go into it, you know, you make the best of it that you can. And I felt that, like, that's what we did. We just kept plowing through and doing our best, and in the end, it just wasn't the right marriage, you know, wasn't the right business partner, and that's okay. And we learned a ton from it, and now we're just, you know, back in the game.
Stuart described it, that relationship seems to be it. I mean, right? It's like dating.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, the way I described it before is that it's like dating the girl with really, really rich parents. like if it ends up working out, there's a lot of benefits to that. Right. However, if you know you just can't stand her, it ends up being problematic.
yeah, right. I mean, because you, this could work out great. I mean, but I've really got to like her.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you do have to.
And
in the end, she's got to like you.
And in the end, you figured out. Yeah, I don't really like her so much, right? And that's, but I guess the thing is, what was your first indication, Jacob, Brandon, and Aaron? I wanted to get you on this. What was your first indication that was like, we're gonna have to really compromise a lot?
First indication was one of the first times when we had a meeting with our producer, and after he had talked to our A&R at the label, who was kind of in charge of the project. He basically came to us and said, "Okay, these are the changes that need to be made," and it was obvious that we needed to fit into not necessarily a box, but definitely something that was a little more rigid than we had wanted.
Yeah,
and I think we did an amazing job at following through and trusting what they were telling us, because we thought to ourselves, this is Atlantic Records.
Yeah. They know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But was it a little bit, Brandon, like they handed you the, here, this costume, it's supposed to fit. And we're like, wait, this doesn't really fit.
It's almost like they, going on with that analogy, it's almost like they didn't take our measurements quite right. You know, it's like, well, I was a 28 waist at one point in my life, but... Maybe that's a bad way to state it.
But I'm not there. But I'm not there anymore.
I'm not there. Yeah. I just think that there was. They're looking to fill a hole that we just didn't quite fit in. We were square. That hole was round. I mean, we're pretty square anyway. But.
But were you like Aaron? Were you bummed? Were you like, oh man, that's not us at all. They don't get us at all.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I mean, the one of the big singles that were out. That was out during the time that we were recording our album was that Lumineers single.
Yeah.
And we played them the track that we had recorded, and then they said, yeah, that's cool, but have you guys heard that Lumineers song? Can you make it a little bit
more
like
that? Can you
say hey
ho?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, that's not us at all.
Really, I guess we can add some hays and hoes in there if that really is going to make a difference.
And also, I would say that it was an indication of where the label was at, and not only the label, but just the music industry in general. Because I don't think any of us really looked down on our producer or our A&R in the sense of, wow, we're doing things that are so off the beaten path. Yeah. This is not us at all. But what it came down to was it told us that the music industry is afraid of taking risks.
Yeah,
they're so afraid, especially major labels right now, because if they take a risk and it's the wrong direction or people don't like it, then guess what? Someone gets fired over it.
Yeah.
And so people are, and that's really, it's really telling, and it's unfortunate, because when you look at the classic albums, when you look at the greatness of music, you see creativity.
Yeah.
And you see people that think outside the box.
You see guitar solos, which we'll talk about a little bit as we go along too, because yeah. I know that was a dispute. It was an issue, Robbie, for you and maybe some others. But I want you to play a song. This is obviously from the new album. This is called Cut String Kite. Now, so here, which one? Who wrote this, by the way? Is this Robbie or Stuart?
This is kind of a joint composition.
Yeah.
It started. With a poem that Robbie wrote that was not about kites. I had the line cut string kite, and it kind of found meaning from the poem that he wrote. And this one, I wrote the first verse and he wrote the second verse.
Yeah, it was pretty collaborative.
And I came up with the piano part.
Okay, so here I am reading too much into lyrics maybe, but...
No, you can read as much as...
A cut string kite caught up in a dream from the mouth of a machine. Is there any way that where machine is... Record
the same
business,
machine that
Atlantic.
The Pink Floyd sang about.
Yeah.
Not as much in this case, no.
Really?
No.
But
no,
feels like it now.
This song was written more as an out, like a somebody looking at their, pretty much someone in my life that I love a lot and respect a lot and kind of feeling like they're drifting away.
Huh.
So it's more about that person than us in this case.
Because obviously I'm thinking, you write about this moment where you are a mind split at the seams, and I'm like, oh, they're all, how much am I compromising for my art and all stuff like that? Is that okay that I read
no,
that into
please
that?
Do. Yeah, I want to dig into this.
Okay.
It's all related more than we even know, I think. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, here's Fictionist. This is a song from the new album. It's called Cut String Kite. Fictionist from their just released self-titled album. Next Friday, October 17th, they're having a CD release party, by the way, at 8 o'clock at Velour Live Music Gallery in Provo. We'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go along. So you were in the process of heading toward an album with Atlantic. They didn't end up releasing one. What are there remnants from that project in this one? How much of that is could you salvage, I guess?
Yeah, there's two songs that we ended up reproducing for the self-titled record, Statue in the Stone and Can't Get Enough. And when we got done recording everything for this record, we kind of just looked at all the material and went with whatever felt the best. And those two sort of rose to the surface and seemed like they would it would be a good move for the band. They're good songs. So.
It's interesting. They offered you, if I get this right, they offered you the master recordings, and you were like, "I don't really want them." Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct.
Why?
It wasn't what we wanted. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I sort of surprised myself at the end of that. You know, it was an intense amount of work making that record, And at the end of it, just for artistic reasons, getting the master back and feeling like, man, you know, this just feels artificial and this doesn't feel like us. And, you know, things were getting strange with the label. It was just kind of like, I don't want this. I don't know that anybody in the band really was super stoked on it at that point. And so we just, you guys can have it if you want. So
by that point, we'd already decided we wanted to re-record, you know, like kind of have the vibe more than what we wanted anyway. So when they offered us that master, we'd already kind of moved on.
So I'm trying to figure out what's it like? I mean, one of the things you guys have talked about is that there were certain rules that they sort of laid out, which seemed really arbitrary to me and kind of strange from a record label, but I guess that's just the way it works. But like, you're supposed to sing a certain way. We don't want two lead vocals guys. We don't want too many guitar. Look, I bet there have been arguments over guitar solos with every label and every band forever.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Led Zeppelin was going through all of this. Pink Floyd was going through all of this.
This is not a new thing.
That's not a new thing. But you must have the rules must have been surprising. Like, what were the rules, if it's that way to put it? Like, what was that like?
I think they were pretty unspoken. I don't know that there was any.
Something that just came to mind is as I was doing my vocals, the comment was edgier, edgier. Do it edgier. We got to be edgier. And I look back at those recordings and I'm like, man, like, I'm just like screaming everything. I'm literally screaming these songs.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But I don't know. That's not my vibe as a vocalist. I've never been that way. I really like subtlety and I enjoy, you know, speaking vocals and just doing whatever I feel. And so that, I mean, vocally, that was one very strange thing. After that, I'm asking myself, you know, what is it about like screaming vocals that's so appealing to everybody? No offense. I do love to scream, but not all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a strange place to
be. Well, but I mean, I get the idea of edgier, I suppose, but if that's not who you are, then what were they expecting?
That's a really good question. I think that's the we haven't answered that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they don't even know. Yeah. You know, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, Brendan.
Well, I remember being in the studio at one point and we're recording this stuff that a lot of it's really big sounding, big drums. And I don't remember exactly how it went down, but I heard the message from the A&R after we'd, you know, kind of worked on this really, really big sound, and he's like, yeah, could you make this sound a little bit more like Gautier? And people that don't know, it's like Gautier's like sample-based, really like gentle most of the time. I mean, I don't know. It was just like...
But somebody that I used to know was big then, right?
Right.
So I was
thinking about... It's like, what are you talking about?
That's kind of
no
scary.
Offense to any
No, no, of
particular
course, but
person,
yeah. But I guess...
Call it what it is. But, it is what it is.
But the point is that obviously he wasn't getting... I mean, at some point, did you ever say to him, hey, guys, I get that you like Lumineers. I get that you like Gautier, but that's not really us. Did you ever actually...
I never had the heart to say that.
Yeah.
But see, I don't think that it was that they like those bands. They like that they're
they
selling albums.
Bands. Yeah, right.
And they're successful.
Yeah.
We can't
and
blame
so,
them for wanting to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
So they were trying to figure out what was the thing that made those things work. Let's see if you guys
exactly.
can figure it out.
And that's the thing about the music industry that is so mysterious. It's that no one knows. Literally no one knows what is going to sell. Yes, there are, you know, hit producers that write these hit songs and such, but we weren't one of those bands.
Yeah.
And so trying to make us one of those bands is definitely not... It's not going to work.
Right. I want to hear you do Statue in the Stone. So where did this song come from? What was the origins of it?
This song came from an idea that I had where I feel like I've had these moments and I see other people have them all the time where when I had the idea, it was like I was watching it in a movie, but like the person like standing in the mirror, like just looking at themselves and saying like, how did I get here? Where do I want to be? That kind of idea. And so that's what, you know, Hey Looking Glass is all about, is looking into the mirror and wondering that. And Stu and I got together and came up with the concept of a statue being carved out of the stone. The like kind of unrealized potential.
Yeah. There's a voice that's screaming, let me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's a...
Literally above my bedroom at the time, like the paint was like falling.
Huh.
So like that's the line about like, you know, yeah, paint chipping on the ceiling, kind of laying in bed, and then you slowly get up and look in the mirror and kind of wonder where you are.
In a situation that you want desperately to be out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here I am reading into that again. All right.
How dare you?
How dare I? Statue in the Stone.
Don't actually read our lyrics. These are songs.
Fictionist, Statue in the Stone.
One, two, three.
Fictionist from their latest album. It's self-titled. Next Friday, October 17th, they're having a CD release party, 8 o'clock at Valour Live Music Gallery in Provo. If you go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org, you can get all of the details and download a free track, Not Over You. Stuart Maxfield, Robbie Connolly, Jacob Jones, Brandon Kitterman, Aaron Anderson, they'll be back when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our series on local music. The band Fictionist is back with us. The band has a new story to tell. They're on their own again with lessons about the experience being with a major label, what it's like to try and make music when you're in the music business. Not that easy, it turns out. Their album, self-titled, is just out next Friday. They're having a CD release party. We'll give you the details about that. You can go to our website, by the way, Facebook and Twitter also, get a free download of one of their songs. And there's a drawing, by the way, for tickets and for CDs there as well. Fictionist is R, Stuart Maxfield, Robbie Connolly, Jacob Jones, Brandon Kitterman, and Aaron Anderson. So I want to have you do Free Spirit, if you would. Seems like there are a lot of songs about where people are like breaking up or relationships that are on the verge. Do we need to be worried about anything?
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
This is just a love song, right? I mean, it's just what. Where did Free Spirit come from? I really like this song.
So Free Spirit, I never want to bring anybody down. I don't think anybody does, and sometimes, for whatever reason, I feel that I do to the people around me. And so I guess the funny part is this is our most rocking up-tempo song probably on the record that also has a very serious sentiment to it. So.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to stick around if you don't want to. I mean, do you want to say anything about the sentiment that you're getting at there?
I think it kind of speaks for itself.
Okay.
You know, it's you never want... you know, apply it to the band, you know, at the end of like this journey with the label. It's like sometimes I kind of started the band, I guess you could say. I bugged Aaron for months to come and join this band, to move to Utah. And I feel a sense of responsibility for that sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, after so long, you feel like things haven't panned out the way that you thought. We're so stoked about the new record and everything is really positive right now. But at that time, it was a feeling of there's these people that are tied to you and these people that you're responsible for, and you don't want them to feel like they're just stuck with you.
Yeah.
You know, they have their own lives and you want them to live it.
Yeah.
So that's the sentiment.
Cool.
That's where that was coming
Great.
From.
This is Free Spirit from Fictionist.
Terrible dream, but you don't have to stick up.
Free Spirit from Fictionist's latest album, self-titled. They're here in the studio, Stuart Maxfield, Robbie Conley, Jacob Jones, Brandon Kitterman, and Aaron Anderson. So, Stuart, you mind talking behind Robbie Conley's back for just a moment here? Because one of the things that you guys have talked about, one of the things that seems to have kind of emerged during the process over the last several years is that Robbie starts to take on a different kind of role. It becomes a more sort of collaborative experience in terms of the songwriting. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, and to be honest, was this a little hard to give up a little bit? I mean, you're brothers-in-law, so this may be a problematic at like Thanksgiving if you don't say the right thing, but you know what I mean? Was that hard?
I think you'd have to understand a little bit of my backstory. So I got into singing in bands because a singer quit. Nobody else would do it, and I was just playing the bass. And somebody's got to sing. I mean, bands have singers, don't they? And so then it was my turn to sing. So I kind of wrestled with the idea for like 12 years, and then it took me a while to warm up to the idea. I've never personally felt like, hey, everybody, I want to go solo or something like that. I've always thought of myself as a collaborator and a band guy. And so, believe it or not, everyone on the airwaves right now, I was actually relieved to have somebody to share that responsibility with. And especially after the whole record label thing, they put so much pressure, like, you're the front man. You got to be the front man. Yeah. Bands need a front man.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I like Pink Floyd. You know, they had two guys. The Cars had three guys. I mean, Beatles had four guys. I don't really think there's a magic number. It's just like, make great music and let it just be that simple. And so it's been so fun to be like, all right, you want to sing something? Sing something. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah. Robbie, it seems like one of the things that you really like this. I mean, and I think this is the sense of the album, is it's about experimentation. One of the things you've talked about is that you found your dad's office an old Yamaha keyboard, and you're like, let's throw this into the mix. So it's about kind of playing around with sounds.
Yeah, my dad's
and stuff.
A dentist, and I have a faint memory of at one point him saying, hey, one of my patients brought by a keyboard, do you want it? And I said, I don't know, sure. And then I forgot, and then years later I went back and I found it. I was like, oh, this thing's fun. It's just like one of those toy ones from the 80s, but for whatever reason, we got super into it. It has some fun sounds on it, and it's on almost every song, I think.
The jazz guitar setting is just immaculate.
Yeah.
But that idea of playfulness and experimentation,
yeah,
and you
we've
really
all,
like that.
Yeah, we love kind of making an instrument out of whatever we can find. And so there were some nice instruments on the record, too, for sure, but like, I would say just as many like cheap ones, too.
Yeah. So Jacob and Brandon and Aaron, what did you, as you see Robbie sort of now moving into the collaborative role with Stuart, what did that change the dynamic of the band in any way? What did you make of the way things were kind of evolving? They're all pointing to each other. You go.
You go. This is Brandon. I will speak. Well, I think that it's really nice to have someone else in the mix as far as songwriting is concerned, not because Stu's songs are bad by any means, but because it's nice to have somewhere else to have those songs coming from, if that makes sense,
sure.
Creatively.
Yeah.
I can see pretty clearly a difference between the two songs, or the two songwriters, rather. And I feel like Robbie brings an element of kind of naive, not that Robbie's naive, but a little bit more
baby.
Naive writing and a little bit kind of more, I hate to use the word fun because it makes it sound like Stuart's songs aren't fun, but they are, so that's kind of, it's just nice to have that contrast in there. You're a fun guy.
But Robbie's more fun.
And we're really influenced by Floyd, Pink Floyd, and they had two writers, and you listen to the songs that they produced, both of them, and they both had such a unique aspect to their songs, and that's so cool to have within our group.
See, but I think that's, it's funny, we were actually having a conversation a week ago or so about creativity and the idea that when these pairs of collaborators work with each other, but also there's a little bit of competition. There's a little and forth, and it makes you, it just makes you better.
I listened to that. I was so inspired. Just the power of two.
Yeah.
If I was to say anything about like the shift that's happened, not only do you hear kind of this counterpoint point of personality throughout the record, which I think is really refreshing and really cool, it caused me to really stretch myself as a writer, because Robbie brings the song, for example, Lock and Key. The first time I hear this song, I'm driving in my car sobbing by myself, literally crying by myself, like, oh, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm having this out-of-body experience baby moment, giant baby moment. And simultaneously, I'm thinking, crap! Like,
he nailed it!
Yeah, I need to up my game.
Yeah.
And it really caused me to look inside myself to be like, okay, like, all right, Stewie, like, Let's get serious here. Let's dig a little deeper and bring my A game. And I think that actually helped me as I wrote throughout this record to write much, much, much better songs, because Robbie's constantly trying to knock them off the record.
No.
All right.
I feel the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's a friendly competition.
Say something, Robbie, quickly then about Lock and Key. It's this idea where there's a part of you that you keep to yourself, and at what point do you reveal yourself, not just to your loved one or your close ones? I mean, there's the part that you keep to yourself, right?
Yeah, the song, it kind of starts out like a love song, like people, you know, interpret it as a love song. To me, it was never, I mean, it is a love song, but it's also just anyone I meet. I'm the kind of person where, I think it is about ninth grade or so, where I kind of had this, like, thought where, like, man, I feel like everyone likes the idea of me, but then once they get to know me, they kind of get sick of me a little bit. I think that's because I'm a little bit shy.
yeah,
exactly. No, for sure.
Yeah.
And I seem fun, but then it's like, oh, yeah, you're just like a normal kind of quiet dude, and that's it. Anyway, so it's kind of that thought. It's like, okay, at what point when you're getting to know someone or falling in love with them, is it like, this is the real me now?
Here it is, Lock and Key, Fictionist.
I can't let no one in, I keep it under lock and key.
Lock and Key, Fictionist. I should mention, by the way, that we are featuring one of the music videos from Fictionist is this week's Video West pick, and it happens to be Lock and Key. You can go to videowest.kuer.org for that. I want you to do City at War. I have to say, the thing that kept coming into my mind was Ferguson, Missouri. I can't imagine you had that in mind, but it seems like there's this big metaphor here, like literal cities at war. Ferguson came to mind, obviously. But it seems like there's other stuff here. You know, the song describes a father, a brother, a sinner, a son, a saint. Can't escape the skin I'm living in. A number of ways of thinking about war.
Yeah, when I wrote this song, I was kind of absorbed with this concept that society at large displays the same strengths and weaknesses and conflict that any person does within themselves. Sometimes we speak about society like, we just can't believe it. I just can't believe things are the way they are. And then, you know, I go home and I realize that war, it exists inside of me. And I think that's kind of where it comes from, you know, like what the things that we see around us are just a reflection of ourselves most of the time.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a personal song, but yeah, it's a metaphor for a lot of different things. It's about that inner turmoil that we experience together and also separately just as individuals inside ourselves.
Here it is, City at War.
Scene from high above. I don't know whose side.
City at War. Fictionist.
Wow.
So let me ask you finally, because I want to get to Give It Up here finally from the album. So Stuart, I think it was you who described this as kind of this experience you've been through over the past couple of years as sort of the crucible for the band. Just all of you take a few seconds, if you would, and just reflect on, I guess you're, I mean, obviously you're going to spin this in the best possible way. I mean, it was a tough time, but you worked through it. But I guess in some way you must be feeling that if we hadn't gone through that thing, you wouldn't have really been at this point. And you figure you're in a pretty good point.
Yeah.
I've definitely had those thoughts. I know all of us have. At the very same time, I mean, artists are insane. Just, you know, putting that out there.
Right.
We're so motivated by our art that it sort of can distract us from any number of negative experiences. When I listen to the music that we're now making and the camaraderie, I look at the friendship that we have among ourselves, and that we came out intact. Nobody quit. It's actually a miracle. I feel so positive inside that I just want to keep making music. You know, it's a good place to be.
Yeah.
We were talking the other day, and I had the thought, like, you know, if we didn't go through that, maybe we would have gone through something just as bad anyway, so let's just enjoy where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's brought us closer together.
We're happy, you know?
Brought us closer together, both, you know, friendship-wise and also musically,
yeah,
to really get there.
Not to mention, it's just a good story to tell. Now we have something to spin.
No kidding. That's the best part. Yeah. Brandon, final thought?
Well, yeah, my final thought is just that the comment that we've been getting back most often from this album is that it sounds like we had fun, and we totally did, and that's exactly what I want people to connect to. It's like, yeah, it's important music, it's serious music, but we just had so much fun doing it, and we're going to have so much fun giving it to you, so come, let's party.
Fictionist, that's Brandon Kitterman on guitar, bass, and synth, Stuart Maxfield on vocals and bass guitar, Robbie Conley, vocals and lead guitar, Jacob Jones on keys, Aaron Anderson on drums. They've just released this latest album called Fictionist. Friday, October 17th, they're in concert at Velour Live Music Gallery in Provo. Go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org, for details. Radio West, a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Fictionist sound engineer Mark Carey. Thanks to Michael Shea and Mike Anderson, our engineering team today, Adrian Moranville, Michael Havey, and Lewis Downey, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Here's Fictionist with Give It Up.